Today, this message will be, I'll tell you right up front, a little bit longer than I typically give. It is more like a Bible study type of a sermon. We're going to look at a little bit of a longer topic. And so it'll go hopefully just about an hour. So I usually end a little earlier, but I just wanted to forewarn you. But hopefully I'll keep your interest in the topic of today. We know that God has chosen us to be in his church. God has seen fit to call us into the assembly of his people and placed us here in this assembly for our nurture and our growth. And also among the church of God here, among us here, God has put leaders over us. He's put those who are watching out for our souls. And the leaders whom God appoints are those who look out for the sheep. And it is the ministry's chief task to feed the flock of God. This is what Christ told Peter, if you remember, at the beach, on that day at the beach after Christ's resurrection. Jesus asked, "Do you love me?" And he said, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." He said, "Feed my sheep." And he said it twice more after that, "Feed my sheep, tend my flock." Well, we are those who know God's voice. The sheep know the voice of God. And just as Christ said, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." Christ said this. He also said, though, "Take heed that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and deceive many." So there will rise up or come many who do not care for the sheep and the flock of God. And so it is incumbent upon us, brethren, as members of the church of God, that we discern what we hear. It wasn't long after the church began that false doctrine began creeping in. And at one point, Paul acknowledged this in his letter or in his farewell to the Ephesian elders. So I'd like to open the scriptures today in Acts chapter 20. Look at Acts chapter 20 with me here. This is Paul saying farewell to the Ephesian elders. And he tells them in verse 28, Acts chapter 20, verse 28, "Therefore take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which he has purchased with his own blood." It is their responsibility. "For I know this," verse 29, "that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock." And that's indeed what happened. The trouble intensified in the latter part of the first century so much that it compelled the apostles to address it in their epistles. An example is the epistle of Jude. Let's turn to the epistle of Jude. It's the short one-chapter book right before Revelation, the epistle of Jude, where he opens his epistle saying in verse 3, "I found it necessary to write to you to exhort you to contend earnestly for the faith which was once delivered to the saints. For certain men have crept in unnoticed." That's verse 3. Certain men have crept in. Let's look at now verse 10. Let's come to verse 10. "But these speak evil," these ones that have crept in, "these speak evil of whatever they do not know. They are led by their carnal mind," their carnal thinking. They're just talking out of their own heads, not being led by the Spirit. "They speak evil of whatever they don't know and whatever they know naturally, like brute beasts, and these things they corrupt themselves. Woe to them," verse 11, "for they have gone in the way of Cain. They have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit, and they have perished in the rebellion of Korah." Now, these three individuals listed here are what I'll say nefarious characters in the Old Testament: Cain, Korah, and Balaam. And their example is used to show what false prophets or false teachers are like. Most of us are familiar with the stories here of these three. Today we're going to look at one of them, and it is Korah and his story, and that is in Numbers chapter 16. So I'll have you turn to Numbers chapter 16. This will be our focal point today. We'll go through this story, the rebellion of Korah. We have probably heard this story many times over the years. In sermons, perhaps we've heard it used as an example of having respect for the ministry that is placed in the Church of God. And true, that is right, that we must have respect for those who are over us in the church as God has placed them there, as God has placed them there. But others are self-appointed, and these are the ones we have to discern between. And so we can look at the example of Korah's rebellion as an example for us in discerning truth and error. We could draw lessons from this story. So the title of the sermon today is Korah's Rebels versus God's Chosen. And this is to help us determine or discern between the ministers of God and the ministers of Satan, to help us discern. This is a very dramatic story, as again, I think we're familiar with it. It happens in the wilderness wanderings of the children of Israel, some length of time into those wanderings, it happens. And it is very clear in the story who it is that God has chosen, as we will see. So let's just start here in verse 1 of number 16 and go through it. In verse 1 of number 16, now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. So there's the characters right there who did this. They rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, and men of renown. So who are these individuals that are mentioned here? Who are Dathan and Abiram and On? Well, they are of, as it says here, they are of the sons of Reuben. They're the tribe of Reuben. And Korah, as it says here, is the son of Izhar. So let's think about this. Reuben, who is Reuben? Reuben is the firstborn of Jacob. So Jacob had 12 sons. Reuben was the firstborn. And some of these men are of the tribe of Reuben. And therefore, they rise up against Moses because they think, hey, we're the firstborn. We have a right to be in the leadership of this congregation. Who is Korah? It says the son of Izhar. So keep your place here and come over to Numbers chapter 6, and we'll get a little bit of the genealogy of the sons of Korah, as we'll read it here in Exodus chapter 6. But let's take a look here in Exodus 6 and verse 16. Read Exodus 6 and verse 16. Now, these are the names of Levi according to their generations. So Korah is, we already know, a son of Levi. And these are the names of the sons of Levi according to their generations: Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. So Levi's three sons: Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. And the sons of Kohath, verse 18 now, verse 18, were Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. Now, Izhar, remember we read it, was the father of Korah. So let's now look at verse 20 and go a little further here. Verse 20 of Exodus 6. Now Amram, again, who's Amram, was son of Kohath, took for himself Jochebed, his father's sister, his wife, and she bore him Aaron and Moses. So Amram, son of Kohath, son of Levi, was the father of Aaron and Moses. Amram was the father of Aaron and Moses. And then verse 21. And the sons of Issachar, Amram's brother Issachar, had sons, and they were Korah, Nepheg, and Zichri. And so we see Korah and Moses were first cousins. They're first cousins. And Korah says, well, you know, I'm part of the leadership family, and therefore I have a right to be part of this leadership. And so you see, as you think about who they are, the firstborn family, Reuben, men of Reuben, and men of Moses' family, first cousins, they feel they have a right. So what did they do? They gathered, verse 3, now we're back in Numbers 16. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why do you exalt yourself above the assembly of the Lord? So these men came to Moses and say, why are you exalting yourself above the assembly of the Lord? They were accusing Moses as well as Aaron of placing themselves above the congregation. Is that correct? Who put them in that role? Well, God put them in that role. God placed Moses and Aaron as leaders of the congregation. And so to rise up against Moses and Aaron, they're really rising up against God and accusing Moses and Aaron of putting themselves over the congregation when that's not true. God had done this. So this is the first lesson in discernment. And remember, we're thinking about discernment between God's appointed, God's ministers, and the ministers of Satan. We're using that as our lesson, using the example here of Korah and drawing that lesson out of it. So here is Moses' response in verse 4. When he heard it, he fell on his face, because he knew what they were doing. Moses had been with God in the mountain. He had received the commandments from God himself on two occasions. Remember, he broke one tablet, then he went back up and got another one. He talked with God in the burning bush. He knew God's power. He also knew God's wrath. And so he fell on his face. He knows this is not going to end well, right from the beginning. And he spoke to Korah, verse 5, and all of his company, saying, tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near to him. That one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. So God is going to show who is his. It's not going to be Moses showing, it's going to be God who will show. And how is God going to settle this matter? How is God going to show that? As it says, that one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him. There's another lesson here. The one who is of God is close to him. The one who is of God is drawing near to God. And how do we know that? Because we could see it in the fruits of their lives. We could see that in the fruits of their lives. If you'll hold your place here now in Numbers 16, remember we're coming back, and come over with me to Matthew 7. Matthew 7. This is the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus is telling us how to discern false prophets. How to discern false prophets by their fruits. In the same manner, you can discern who is of God's by the fruits in their lives. The one who is close to God shows that by their fruits. On the other hand, we can discern a false minister in the same way, by their fruits. Verse 15 of Matthew 7, Christ says, "Beware, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're ravenous wolves." Thinking back to Paul's words to the Ephesian elders as he was saying goodbye to them, ravenous wolves are going to come in among you, who come to you, as Christ says, in sheep's clothing. How do you know? As it says, as Christ says, you will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorn bushes or figs from thistles? No. You gather grapes from a grapevine, not from a thorn bush. And so you will know that by their fruits. So, coming back now to Numbers 16. Number 16, so Moses tells Korah to do something. Moses says, okay, you want the priestly job. You want to be a priest? All right, here's what you're doing. Here's what to do. He's going to give them a priestly job. And do this, verse 6, he says, do this. Take censers, Korah, and all your company. This is the job of a priest, but that's what they want. They want to be the priest. Go ahead, put fire in them and incense in them before the Lord tomorrow, and it shall be that the man whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi. So this censer is a metal bowl with a chain or a handle on it. And inside that metal bowl, you put the hot coals. And on the hot coals, you put the incense. So the incense starts to burn and smoke and gives off the aroma. And that ball is held with a chain, or perhaps it's on an end of a stick, but some length so you don't hold the hot bowl or the hot orb in the hands. That's what the censer is. It's used in the temple service. Used by the priests. And so, go ahead, put the fire in the bowl, and come appear before the Lord. And he tells them, you take too much upon you, you sons of Levi. And who's he speaking to, remember? This was his cousin, taking too much upon him. Now, keep your hands here. Or your place here, and we'll come over now to Leviticus chapter 10. And let's see an example of how well this is going to go. In Leviticus chapter 10, it was Aaron's own sons, Nadab and Abihu, who had already been consecrated as priests. They had already been ordained as priests, and they took fire censers and offered before the Lord in a way they were not commanded. It's in Leviticus chapter 10 and verse 1. Two sons of Aaron, already priests, Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, to each took his censer and put fire in it, and put incense on it, and offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded. And so, verse 2, fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. So Moses tells them, the man whom the Lord, back in Numbers 16, in verse 7, the man whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Aaron. Cousin, my cousin. And so then Moses said to Korah, verse 8, continuing in Numbers 16, verse 8, hear you now, you sons of Levi. Is it a small thing that to you that God, the God of Israel, has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you to himself, to do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to serve him? They were appointed a special role. They were Levites. in verse 10, that he has brought you near to himself and all of your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you? Are you seeking the priesthood also? And so they were of the tribe of Levi, but they were not priests. Now, all priests are of Levi, but not all Levites are priests. So just a few of the Levites are appointed to the priesthood. But the other Levites who are not consecrated to the priesthood are dedicated to the service of the temple. They have a high and honored place. And Moses says, is that a small thing for you? You were separated for that, to do the work of the tabernacle and to stand before the congregation. Isn't that enough? And you want the priesthood also? And therefore, verse 11, therefore all of your company are gathered together against the Lord. You're gathering against the Lord. It's not me. You're gathering against the Lord. And what is Aaron that you complain against him? Aaron was put in that place by God. So what is their real complaint? What is Korah's real complaint and his companions, his fellow rebels? They look at the work of that God has given them as a small thing. And it's already an honor position. And they want more. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound familiar? Is this not what Satan wanted when he rebelled? He wanted to be in the place of God. He said, I will ascend the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. That's Isaiah 14, verse 14. I will be like the Most High. He was not content with his place. And so here is another lesson in discernment. The imposter is not content with his place and seeks to exalt himself. So as we're drawing the lessons for discerning between the true ministers of God and the false, the imposter is not content with his place and seeks to exalt himself. And unfortunately, in the Church of God, this has been a scourge. It has been a problem. There have been splits and divisions because men in the church have sought to exalt themselves above their place. That has been a problem. All of us in the church have honored positions. All of us do. Indeed, the whole church is holy. God chooses us to put us where he will. And that he does. And it becomes evident who he has chosen to lead. And so they were appointing themselves. So then Moses sends for Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Reuben. Remember them, Dathan and Abiram, sons of Reuben. What is their response? In verse 12, we see their response. So Moses sent to call for Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, who were of the tribe of Reuben. But they said, we will not come up. No, we're not going to listen to you, Moses. They are extremely critical of Moses, and they throw Moses' words right back at him. And it's very disrespectful. And so here's another lesson. The rebellious or the ungodly or the imposter unfairly criticize God's servants. They find an excuse and to criticize. Their response, Dathan and Abiram, their response is literally outrageous. They are saying that even Egypt is the land of meat, milk, and honey. Let's read it. He goes right back to Moses and says, is it a small thing that you, Moses, have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey? We were in the land of milk and honey. That was Egypt. And you've brought us into this wilderness so that you should be, you keep acting like this prince over us. Now, this is a real complaint. They're not looking to God, not trusting that God has brought them out and God is providing for them. No, they want to be in the leadership spot. And they accuse Moses of bringing them out of a land of milk and honey, which they call Egypt. And moreover, they say in verse 14, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey. We were promised that. Where is it? Nor have you given us the inheritance of fields and vineyards. Where is it? Will you put out the eyes of these men? Like, we can see what's going on. Are you going to just take our eyes out so we don't see what's going on? It's a very disrespectful complaint that Dathan and Abiram are hurling right back at Moses. We will not come up, they say. So what does Moses do? What's his response? Well, keep your place here. We'll just go a few chapters away this time, the Numbers 12, and come over to Numbers 12 and verse 3. Numbers 12 and verse 3. Now it says here, the man Moses was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. What was Moses' response? Did he lash out? Did he get angry right back? Did he hurl insults right back at them? No. He didn't do that at all. He went to God. That's what he did. He went to God. And so here is another lesson in discernment. The one who is God's chosen takes his problems to God. He doesn't blame others. He goes to God. He's meek, and he takes his problems and troubles to him. But he's still very angry. He comes to God, and Moses, very angry, verse 15 says, and said to the Lord, do not respect their offering. What offering? This offering of fire they were going to be making. I have not taken one donkey from them, or I have not hurt them, one of them. So in our terms, I've not taken one donkey. You know, a donkey was an important animal. It was an animal that could carry a lot of burden. It was very valuable to have such an animal do work, carry a burden. I have not taken one. I've not taken at all, nothing. So do not respect them. He doesn't lash back, but he goes to God, takes his troubles to God. And so we come to verse 16, just kind of reminding us where we are. Moses had told Korah, go and make this offering. So Moses said to Korah, verse 16, tomorrow you and all your company be present before the Lord, you and they, as well as Aaron. And let each take his censer and put incense in it. And each of you bring his censer before the Lord, 250 censers. So one censer for each one, both you and Aaron, each with a censer, all of you. So tomorrow comes, Korah and the men with him stand with Moses and Aaron at the tabernacle. So we come now to verse 18. Verse 18. So every man took his censer, put fire in it, laid incense on it, and stood at the door of the tabernacle of the meeting with Moses and Aaron. So you have all this group of 250 there. And Korah gathered, verse 19, all the congregation against them at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. And Korah's riling up the people, getting the people on his side, the entire congregation on his side, against them, against Moses, at the door, and Aaron, at the door of the meeting. And then verse 19 says, the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. So the Lord is about to act. And Korah had this whole group, this whole congregation backing him, but now God is going to act. Now God is going to show who is holy before him. Now the glory of the Lord has appeared. And he speaks. The Lord speaks. And the response is devastating. Moses and Aaron, what did the Lord speak? The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron saying, separate yourselves from this, from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. I'm going to wipe them out. That's what God is saying. I'm going to wipe them all out. What is their response? What is the response of Moses and Aaron? They fell on their faces and said, "Oh God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin and you be angry with all the congregation?" Their response was to pray for the people. Now, this is another sign of who is God's minister, who is not. God's ministers intervene for the people. They pray for the people. And we see that all throughout the scripture. In the example of Daniel, for instance, who had a beautiful prayer, praying to God for his people. Jeremiah the prophet, pouring out his heart for his people. Paul, remember Paul, wishing his own countrymen were like him, but they were not. Paul also praying so often for the brethren. Here we see Moses and Aaron praying for the people, and our supreme example in scriptures of the intervening for the people, of course, is Jesus Christ. Even as he is being crucified, he prays for the people, intervenes. And he says, "Oh Lord, do not hold this against them. They do not know what they do," as he's being crucified. So God hears the prayer of his servants, Moses and Aaron, and he relents. His anger relents. He hears that prayer. He has respect for them who've intervened. And so the Lord spoke to Moses, verse 23 now, saying, "Speak now to the congregation, saying, get away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, get away." So Moses goes now to warn the people, get away. Now that's another lesson in discerning God's ministers. They warn the people. God's chosen leaders warn the people, give them admonition and warn them. So Moses, verse 25, rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, "Depart now from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in their sins." This is a very dramatic scene unfolding here. What does this remind you of, what he says when he says, "Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in their sins"? Revelation 18, verse 4, "Come out of her, my people, that you do not partake in her sins." Or Paul telling us in Romans 12, verse 2, "Do not be conformed to this world," warning us, don't be part of this world. Or John telling us in 1 John 2, "Do not love the world." And so Moses and Aaron warn the people, say, get away from the tents of Dathan and Abiram. And so they did, verse 27. They got away from around the tents of Korah, from Dathan and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents with their wives and their sons and their little children. And now Moses addresses the congregation. He says, verse 28, "By this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own will." I've not done them by my own works. Does that sound familiar? Moses gives credit to God. And this is exactly what Jesus Christ said numerous times, giving the credit for all that he said, all that he did, to his Father. "The words that I speak," he says, Jesus said, "the words that I speak, I do not speak of my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does the works." This is what Moses says. "All these works," verse 28, "I have not done of my own will." God has done the works. So there's another lesson in discernment of God's chosen leaders versus Satan's. the chosen of God, give him the credit. Give God the credit. So God is about to render this very dramatic judgment on these rebels. So Moses says, verse 29, if these men die naturally like all men, you know, if they live to an old age and die in their beds, or if they are visited by the common fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates a new thing, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into the pit, then you will understand that these men have rejected the Lord. Not rejected him, they've rejected God. So here's a lesson for us. Destruction is the fate of the ungodly. And now, here it is, in verse 31. And now it came to pass, verse 31, as he finished speaking these words, that the ground split apart under them, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the men of Korah, with all their goods. All those those men with him were all taken. And so they, and all with them went down alive into the pit. The earth closed over them, and they perished from among the assembly. They perished. What a dramatic scene. And then all Israel, who were around them, fled at their cry and said, lest the earth swallow us up also. It was frightening. What a display of power this was. And it wasn't over. In verse 35, and a fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense. Just burned up. Consumed them. That is power. The rebels had offered this vain offering, but the censers that they offered them in are articles of the tabernacle. They're still holy things. And so these were collected then. What happens next? Then the Lord said to Moses, verse 36, saying, tell Eleazar, verse 37, the son of Aaron the priest, go pick up the censers out of the blaze, for they are holy, and scatter the fire some distance away. So he has to go in among these bodies that are just burned up and pick up these metal censers, this 250 of them, pick them all up because they're holy, and scatter the fire some distance away. So these censers had these coals in them, but that was a profane offering. It was offered in an unholy manner, even though it was using a holy vessel. So God commanded, take those coals and that offering and get rid of it. Get it out of the camp. Get rid of it, but save the vessel. Save the vessel. And the censers, verse 38, of these men who sinned against their own souls, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar, because they presented them before the Lord. Therefore they are holy, and they shall be a sign to the children of Israel. All of these 250 vessels made into a hammered plate, you know, pounded out and made a covering for the altar. What was the reason that God had them do this? It was for a sign. And so, verse 39, Eleazar the priest took the bronze censers, which those who were burned up had presented, and they were hammered out as a covering on the altar for a memorial, verse 40, to the children of Israel, that no outsider who is not a descendant of Aaron should come near to offer incense before the Lord, that he might not be like Korah and his companions, just as the Lord had said to him through Moses. So that was a reminder, don't ever do that. Don't ever assume that you have that office. That if God has not appointed you to that office, never assume that office for yourself. No one except God's appointed were to come near. Very sobering reminder. But amazingly, the very next day, the people were blaming Moses and Aaron for killing these men. Verse 41. And on the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Lord. You did this. You killed them." But the Lord, what is his response? He's ready to strike again because they're blaming Moses and Aaron. So he says, verse 45, we'll skip to verse 45. God says to Moses and Aaron, "Get away. Get away from this congregation that I may consume them in a moment." Same response. They fell on their faces as they knew the terror of the Lord. And now they intervene again for God's people. And so Moses said to Aaron, now verse 36, "Take a censer and put fire in it from the altar. Put incense on it and take it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them. For wrath has gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun." God was beginning to slay the children of Israel for their rebellion. And Moses tells Aaron, who is the rightful priest, to take this censer and put fire into it and make an offering. He is the rightful priest. And so verse 47, Aaron took it as Moses commanded and ran into the midst of the assembly, and already the plague had been among the people. So he put in the incense and made atonement for the people. Quickly he did it. And the plague stops because God regarded his chosen one, Aaron, who was intervening for the people. And Aaron, verse 48 now, stood between the dead and the living. So there's all these dead and the living are on the other side. And Aaron is stopping the plague. He's right on the front lines with the censer. You can picture the scene. He's intervening. And now those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who had died in the Korah incident, the other 250. And so Aaron returned to Moses at the door of the tabernacle of the meeting, for the plague had stopped. And that ends that chapter. And we can draw quite a few lessons from this. The next chapter, I won't go into it, but the next chapter is about Aaron's rod that budded. And basically the story of that chapter is that God commanded a leader of each tribe to give him a rod or a branch or a stick. And those were taken into the tabernacle overnight. And only one rod of those 12 budded. Which one was it? It was Aaron's rod that budded, thus showing that Aaron was the chosen one. That's what chapter 17 is about. So the lessons that I drew from this, I think we can all draw from this, is first of all, the rebels assume a right to leadership. They assume, hey, we should be there. Korah was of the leadership family. And the Dathan and Abiram were the family of the firstborn of Jacob. They deserve leadership positions. And so what they do is gather others to their cause. We can discern that when we see someone rising up. They gather others to themselves, assuming a right that is not appointed to them. But the one who is God's is close to him. We could tell by their fruits, by the fruits of their lives. And likewise, we could tell the deceiver by the fruits of their lives. As Jesus said, by their fruits, you will know them. This is a way we can discern. Another lesson is that the imposter is discontent with his place and seeks to exalt himself, as Korah wanted the priesthood also. Now, he was of the tribe of Levi. He already had an honored place, but he wanted more. So the imposter seeks to exalt himself because he's discontent with his place. The rebellious ones unfairly criticize God's servants, as Dathan and Abiram gave that blistering criticism against Moses and saying, you've brought us out here. We were in a land of milk and honey, and you're telling us we're going to a land of milk and honey? We could see what's going on. So they unfairly criticize God's servants. But the one who is God's, the chosen of God, is meek. And he takes his troubles to God. He doesn't lash back at those who criticize him. As Dathan and Abiram were criticizing Moses, Moses took the problem to God. Even though he was very upset and angry, he took his problem to God. God's ministers, we also see, they intervene for the people, as we saw in several instances. They warn the people. They give God the credit. That's how you can tell all these lessons we could draw out of this story. And we can also conclude that destruction is the fate of the ungodly, as it was here. We must discern, brethren, between truth and error. And lessons like this one and the rebellion of Korah show us how we can do that. God tells us to discern between the ministers of God and the ministers of Satan, between truth and error. But let's come now to 1 John chapter 4. And let's take a look at what John the apostle is saying. Now remember, John is writing in the very late part of the first century. So the heresy was really creeping in to the church by this time. And so he writes against that. He writes to help combat it. And he says, beloved, verse 1 of 1 John 4. 1 John 4, verse 1. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are of God. Because many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you will know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God. And this is the spirit of Antichrist, which you have heard was coming and now already is in the world. And at that time, the debates were already swirling. The heresies were already swirling about the person and the divinity of Jesus Christ, who he was. Who was Jesus Christ? What was Jesus Christ? The arguments over who and what he was raged for centuries. They began in the first century and raged for centuries, and they were finally settled and culminated in the doctrine of the Trinity in the fourth century at the Council of Constantinople and the Council of Nicaea. The doctrine of the Trinity was introduced. God is three in one, but we know God is two, the Father and the Son. And this is the spirit of Antichrist, really, to deny that God has come in the flesh. And that doctrine is tied up with that spirit. Notice, turn over with me to Philippians chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1, where we need to discern between truth an error, between God's ministers and Satan's ministers. Philippians chapter 1, this is Paul praying for the Philippians. And verse 9, and this I pray, Philippians 1, verse 9, this I pray that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment, and that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense until the day of Christ. As we grow in the knowledge of God, our discernment grows. Our discernment of God's will, of what is right, what are the things that are excellent, who are God's ministers and who are Satan's. So let's apply the lessons that we see in the rebellion of Korah to discern between the imposters and God's chosen. There is one more part of this story that is notable regarding the rebellion of Korah, and it's very much worth mentioning. When God caused the earth to open up, Dathan and Abiram and their families, Korah and the 250 men with him, when also the fire came out, they all died. But the sons of Korah did not die. The sons of Korah did not die. So to see that, now let's go over to Numbers chapter 26. So we're back into Numbers. And the book of Numbers, you may know this, but the reason it's called Numbers is because Israel was numbered twice in the wilderness. Once when they had first come out, they were numbered, counted. A census was taken. And then once before they were about to enter the promised land, another census was taken, another numbering of the children of Israel, hence the book of Numbers. It's Numbers 26 and verse 9 that we'll look at. This was during the census, as the census results are being recorded here, just before crossing into the promised land, before crossing the Jordan. Verse 9, the sons of Eliab were Nemuel, Dathan, and Abiram. The sons of Eliab. These are the Dathan and Abiram, representatives of the congregation who contended against Moses and Aaron in the company of Korah when they contended against the Lord. These are them, Dathan and Abiram. In verse 10, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah. When that company died and the fire devoured 250 men, and they became a sign. But, verse 11, the children of Korah did not die. Well, that's very important, brethren, because it shows something about the mercy of God. The sons of Korah became very prominent in the temple service. They were among the chief of the Levites who took care of the temple. Now, we could go to several scriptures to show that, but I'll go to 1 Chronicles 9. So 1 Chronicles chapter 9, come with me there, and we'll see that the sons of Korah were certainly very much fulfilling their appointed role. They were not assuming to themselves a greater office than God had appointed them to. 1 Chronicles chapter 9 and verse 19. Verse 19. Now Shalom, verse 19, the son of Korah, the son of Ebiasaph, the son of Korah, and his brethren from his father's house, the Korahites, were in charge of the work of the service, gatekeepers of the tabernacle. Their fathers, verse 19, had been keepers at the entrance to the camp of the Lord. Who were the fathers who were keepers at the entrance to the camp of the Lord? Well, they were the sons of Korah who did not die because they did not go after their father's rebellion. They did not follow in the same error as their father. and in the wilderness, in the camp of the Lord, they had been keepers at the entrance to the camp, a very honored and trusted position. And that family trait, to that family occupation of being keepers at the temple, was passed on through the generations. And so by the time the temple was built, the sons of Korah were in very high and trusted positions. And further, the sons of Korah became renowned singers at the temple. In the Psalms, 11 Psalms, very beautiful, are all attributed to the sons of Korah. And from them, we draw some of our most favorite hymns, 11 of them. From Psalm 42, we get "As the Deer." Psalm 42. From Psalm 84, "How lovely are thy dwellings, how lovely are thy dwellings." From Psalm 48, "Great is the Lord, great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised." And then from Psalm 46. Let's go to Psalm 46 and look at this one. This is also attributed to the sons of Korah. Psalm 46. It starts out, "God is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in time of trouble. And therefore, we will not fear, even though the earth be removed." That day in the wilderness, the earth was removed. And the sons of Korah, who wrote this, would have known that. That was their ancestor. But in God's mercy, he didn't kill them because they were faithful to God. They were keepers at the temple of God. They did not go with their father's rebellion and did not die with them, with him and the other rebels. And they would have seen in their lifetimes that hammered brass covering on the altar that was a reminder of those 250 censers that were picked off the burnt bodies and hammered into that covering over the altar. Censers in which their father and the other rebels had offered profanely. It was a reminder to them for the rest of their lives, for these sons of Korah, who did not die that day in the wilderness. They remained faithful. And through the generations, they became very, very prominent in the worship in the temple. We also know, brethren, the mercy of God, that one day he will open the graves of all those who have rebelled against him, including Korah and his 250 rebels. And so we look at this story today and we see a very complete picture of both God's judgment and his mercy. And I presented it to you today as a way for us to draw lessons out of it so that we can help discern between God's ministers and Satan's. Let's go to one final scripture. It's in Malachi chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3. Malachi is the last book of the Old Testament. This is really written about us, about the church of God. Verse 16 of Malachi 3. Then those who feared the Lord spoke to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them. And so a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name. Our names are written in that book. And God says, they shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts, on the day that I make them my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. And then, verse 18, finally, you shall discern between the righteous and the wicked, between the one who serves God and the one who does not serve him. This is our responsibility, brethren, to know that in these days there will be many imposters who rise up, many false doctrines who rise up, and it is our job to discern. And we know, brethren, the plan of God and the end of God, even those for those who rebel against God without full knowledge. Let's take this lesson today of the sons of the rebellion of Korah and also the sons of Korah and apply it to ourselves as we discern between who is of God and who is not.